From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Student athletes came out to call for a return to the classroom and the athletic field.
I'm hoping that this allows student leaders to see our pain, to hear our statistics, to hear our stories, to hear that we're anxious, we're depressed. And sport is the only way that we cope with all that.
Look, I'm not willing to sacrifice people's lives or their health, neither the children nor their parents who would be affected also.
We get it. The virus apparently doesn't infect protesters, looters, and people who go to four-day-long funerals for political figures. For those issues, it's too important to worry about the spread of the virus. But for the issues of educating our children and the things that are important to us, not so much.
That's parent Dave Ruggles at a rally in suburban McCook last week. We also heard from a student, Emily Oviedo, as well as Governor J.B. Pritzker. The rally, they're calling for a return to in-person learning and resumption of fall sports. And those calls have gotten louder, and we'll talk about that and more coming up here on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel, practicing social distancing. From his home, we have Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Kate McGee. She covers education for public station WBEZ in Chicago. And Kate, glad you could join us.
Happy to be here.
Also at the other end of the state, we welcome in Jennifer Fuller, news director for WSIU in Carbondale. And Jennifer, thanks for being with us as well.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Well, we'll get to this issue on sports, and it is a hot-button issue, so we want to talk plenty about it. But first, Charlie, I'm going to go to you. Governor J.B. Pritzker this week, he sounded the alarm when it comes to state finances. We know the pandemic has caused a lot of problems with tax revenue. He wants the federal government to help out, but that's uncertain. Now the governor says he's asking agencies to prepare for a possible 5% cut this year and maybe 10% next fiscal year. I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Is it too early for the governor to be doing this and maybe more of a scare tactic?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't think so. And it's trying to alert people to what the reality will be if the federal government doesn't come through with additional help for cities and states. Now, the Trump administration has kind of framed the debate, and we don't want to bail out these Democratic-led states, these blue states that have done a lousy job in controlling their expenses. But the fact of the matter is states and particularly local governments across the country have lost really a lot of revenue because of the shutdown of the economy to deal with the coronavirus. And in Illinois, it's not just the state of Illinois which is facing problems. It's all the local governments. And you may look at it and say, well, local government, so what? But that's police and fire. That's one of the major expenses for most local governments. And so if there are layoffs looming, what does that mean for public safety at the local level?
Yeah, Charlie, I know a lot of people may say 5%, even 10%. They'll say, hey, I've had to cut back more than that in my home budget. So what's the big deal? But when you have all of these services, and especially still with a pandemic underway, yeah, that could be pretty devastating, it seems, to make those cuts now.
Well, yeah, and you look at where the state spends money. As I've said innumerable times, I sound like a broken record, there's not some guy in the basement of the state house shoveling money into a furnace. Most of the money is for stuff that people agree with. If you look at the appropriations for the current fiscal year, which started on July 1, out of our general funds, which is the kind of the workhorse checkbook account, it's roughly $40.1 billion. $18 billion of that goes for education, for K-12 and higher education. Another $15 goes for human services, stuff like services for the aging, services for mentally disabled people, people with other kinds of problems. All of that is money that can't be easily affected. It's because it's mostly grants. Like in education, the agency that oversees the state education budget for K-12 only has about 75 employees, and they dispatch billions of dollars to local school districts across the state. And so it's not that the money is going to be easily be cut, because if you look at it, a 5% cut is roughly $2 billion out of the $40 billion general funds budget. It's $8 billion out of the entire budget. And so what are the options that the governor has? Now, what he suggested is that agencies could limit or freeze new and replacement hires, limit or halt spending commitments ongoing, continuing a travel freeze. But a lot of what the state does is required by law or by court agreements, and there's not really that much flexibility. So I think in a way, yeah, the governor is sounding the alarm. He talks about it's a nightmare scenario, and he's hoping that ultimately Congress and the president will decide to do something to help all states and all local governments and get over this notion that it's only the so-called blue states that have these problems.
All right, well, we'll continue to watch this. Certainly going to be a big topic of conversation around state government over the next weeks and months. But let me move into the topic we talked about at the start of the show. And we spotlighted this week that the Big Ten is saying sports like football are going to happen, reversing an earlier decision there. At the high school level, though, contact sports are still on hold. Kate, you covered that rally we heard at the start of the program, and it sounds like there is a chorus of people who really want to let them play.
Yeah, there was a lot of anger at that rally on Sunday. People really feeling like they're concerned about the isolation of students being at home for school, but also for sports, and not really having that outlet to, you know, let off steam or let off stress. I talked to a bunch of seniors who are missing out on especially their fall high school sports because lots of fall sports are being pushed to spring or summer. And they're concerned about their scholarship opportunities for colleges. How are colleges going to be able to see them play right now? And they're competing against students from other states where sports have resumed. And they're wondering how they're going to be able to make it work or if they're going to just have to kind of take what they can get. So there was a lot of concern about the future implications of, you know, what's going on right now and how it might affect their college careers that were, you know, was really coming to a forefront of that rally.
And, Kate, we're talking about kids who, in many cases, might not be able to afford to go to school, to go to college, without those scholarships. These are quite often lower-income kids.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the students that I spoke to was, neither of his parents had attended college, and he said that a scholarship for soccer was—he was riding on that scholarship to be able to get into a good school. Other students said, you know, one student said something that really stuck with me about how her mother had said since she was a kid that her travel soccer and all of this soccer was really an investment in her future to be able to get her into college and have it paid for. And so a lot of these plans that families had been making for years are really kind of up in the air now, and they're really pushing as they, I think it's extra frustrating for them. You could feel the frustration as they're seeing schools in Indiana or Michigan return to fall sports, and they're still kind of on the sidelines.
I'm going to get into in a bit what the governor had to say about this, but Jennifer Fuller is with us from Southern Illinois. And Jen, I know that there are some schools in that region where the kids are actually back in the classroom, from a percentage-wise, maybe as much as any region in the state, it seems that kids are actually returning to in-person instruction. Is the call for resuming sports, is that just as strong there?
Sure, absolutely. And you hear from people who understand that fall sports not only are so critical to the well-being, the overall, you know, well-rounded student, but it's also a big point of community pride for a lot of the smaller communities and even larger communities across Southern Illinois. High school football is where everyone is on a Friday night, for example, but you're also looking at other sports, including soccer and some of the others. There are some sports that are able to compete. We see things like cross country in junior high, for example. Baseball and softball are being allowed to play. And that's really causing some consternation for people saying, well, how come we can play this and we can't play that? They understand that there are regulations, but there's a lot of question about how do we continue to do this? And at what point are we going to be able to take that next step? And as we get into some cooler weather, there's some question about, well, is this plan that was set up through the IHSA and the State Board of Education that will bring things back in the spring, is that really going to happen? And beginning to be some concern in that way.
Yeah, I think they're talking about football, for example, and some of these other sports resuming, like you said, in the spring. Now, some people want it to start right now, but I think if it starts, unless it would start almost immediately, we're going to be bumping into other sports that come up in the winter. So it's we're really in this crunch time, I guess. If people want to see sports actually take place in the fall, especially the ones, the contact sports we're talking about, it almost has to happen sometime this month.
One of the local high school coaches here in Springfield said that even if they said we can do it today, it would take a month before the kids would be ready to play. They would need that amount of practice time to get themselves prepared to actually go into a contest that involves so much physical fitness, so much personal contact as football does. I mean, football, if you think about it, football is a lot more of a contact sport than, say, softball or baseball.
Right, and we have seen the pros. The NFL is underway with its season. We've seen some college conferences that have gotten things underway. Kate, earlier this week, Governor J.B. Pritzker was asked about the Big Ten making that reversal to allow these sports now to happen. And he said the difference between the two is that these other leagues can do a lot more testing, do a lot more cleaning if need be, things of that nature, that high schools, most of them, are just not going to be able to do. So he's saying it's not really an apples-to-apples comparison.
Yeah, and I think that's true because in the Big Ten, for example, they will take team positivity rates, population positivity rates, will set up thresholds for whether or not you can play. And if one of your players tests positive, that individual has to sit out, quarantine himself for 21 days, has to undergo a cardiac evaluation, and receive clearance from a cardiologist before he can return to play. And that, I think, reflects one of the things that we're finding out about this virus, that it does, in some individuals, cause very serious heart problems. And so the Big Ten can do it. Their football programs are multi-million-dollar operations, so they can have this daily testing of everybody. They can have these cardiologists on hand to check a guy out who's had the virus. You think about, Jen, like down in your area, how many school districts do you think could afford that kind of oversight to enable the kids to play safely?
It's a financial impossibility.
Even here in Chicago, the mayor has said even if the state does allow sports, that Chicago Public Schools would not bring them back this fall. And I think it's a huge financial burden for a city this large. And also, thinking about college versus high school or elementary school, those kind of youth sports don't really exist in a vacuum the same way that that college does. Students who are in college are living in dorms. They're not coming home to family members, parents, maybe grandparents, and they're able to isolate a bit more than a child or high schooler who tests positive and then might be spreading it to a vulnerable family member who they live with. So there's more isolation on a college campus to be able to isolate a positive test.
Yeah,
and wasn't there, Jen, wasn't there a case, was it in Southern Illinois, was it Wayne County, where there was a local community college baseball team?
Yes, yeah, that was responsible for an outbreak within that county. There were high numbers, and people were really questioning why, and it turned out it was all related to one baseball team at a community college there. And those sorts of things are being seen. We saw over the summer when sports were trying to get back to normal and you were seeing some practices, you saw outbreaks as well. And so I think that's one of the things that Governor Pritzker brought up as well, in terms of we're not able to provide the insulation that would be necessary to do the things that the universities and professional sports have been able to do.
Yeah, Kate, let me go back to that rally that you were at. When it comes to Governor Pritzker, the anger you mentioned there's a lot of people who feel the governor's not listening to them. That comment that was made by a parent that we've seen other events that have taken place over the summer where social distancing was not really appears to be as much of a concern as it does here, the marches for racial justice, things of that nature. Again, your thoughts on that? The governor is feeling some pressure from this, I think. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, there was definitely a kind of overall political tinge to that rally, you know, not just bringing back sports for students, but there was a lot of anger just generally at the governor. People, you know, there was even a petition going around to recall him and kind of call out what people at the rally saw as some hypocrisy, you know, not allowing these high school sports, but allowing protests and other large gatherings that, you know, there's First Amendment rights that go along with that that might not come into play with a high school, you know, basketball game. But I think there is definitely a lot of pressure, especially in the suburbs. You know, as Jen mentioned, there is this real pride in athletics and people being able to play. And I think another issue that comes into play here is a lot of students said to me that, you know, they might not be playing with their high schools right now, but they are playing with private leagues and they're traveling across state lines. And so I wonder if that kind of plays a part in the decision-making process for the governor, knowing that students are traveling for travel soccer to Missouri or to Indiana, and maybe what they could be bringing back with them if they're traveling and then also then playing in a high school game. I think there's some, just, you know, it's really a complicated decision for the governor to have to make.
Well, I know there are people who don't have kids that are in school, or maybe their kids don't play sports or extracurriculars, or you know, or maybe they're just not sports fans. They're probably saying, "Hey, what's all the big hubbub here?" You know, regarding this, you know, they may be saying, "You know, it's all about keeping people safe. It's about getting kids, you know, their academics. This stuff all should be pushed aside." But Jen, that's not really the way it works. And for some of these kids, this is really one of the things that keeps them focused on school and wanting to go to school.
Sure. We've seen studies over the years about students that are involved in extracurricular activities, whether they're sports activities, arts activities, community engagement, those sorts of things, that they actually do better in terms of their class involvement and in some cases their grades and test scores. And so there is a concern among some education leaders and parents that are saying, listen, these students are not getting that extra stimulation that they need in order to stay focused and stay on track to continue with their education. You know, in full disclosure, I've got a senior in high school that has been in marching band for numerous years, and she's not able to march this fall. And that's really taking a toll on her social stimulation and being a part of an arts organization that goes out from day to day and week to week to do things. So it's definitely a concern that I know people are starting to really wonder, you know, well, what can we do? What do we do next?
And Charlie, when you have that going on, again, as I mentioned, the pressure that's on Governor Pritzker, he knows this as well. You know, he's not oblivious to it. But how big of a problem is this for the governor to try to work through, to try to balance out?
Well, I think, as he's said many times, that his sole focus is on trying to minimize the casualty rate, if you will. He doesn't want to make a trade-off saying, well, yeah, we'll let them play high school sports, and maybe there'll only be two or three kids who will bring home COVID to the family, and the grandpa or the grandma gets sick and dies. And that's, well, we're willing to allow that. We'll take that so that the kids can play football. And I think he's not willing to do that. He's trying to follow the guidance of the medical professionals who tell him that the three things that you need to be able to stop this virus and its spread is what we've heard. You have to wear a mask, you have to wash your hands, you have to social distance. And the evidence suggests that it works. You know, we mentioned earlier how the schools in states, high schools in states around Illinois are playing sports, but also they have much higher positivity rates than Illinois. Illinois has got, I think, the lowest positivity rate for COVID of any state in the Midwest. And it's a direct result of people following the advice that the medical professionals have laid out and that the governor has been trying to communicate from day one.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Kate McGee of WBEZ, and Jennifer Fuller with WSIU. Well, let's turn attention to colleges, because this is something that we've been waiting to see how college enrollment would look here in the fall. Been watching that for, or waiting for that for several months now, and now we're actually getting numbers. And Kate, you've been comparing the different the colleges, campuses, and universities in the state. And what are we seeing when it comes to enrollment from an overall perspective?
I think a lot of schools are kind of breathing a sigh of relief after anticipating maybe some large declines. A lot of admissions experts and officials at different schools just said they had no idea what to expect this fall. Even if students were saying they might, you know, show up, that who knows if they were going to be able to make it work to, you know, log on to Zoom that for that first day of class. You know, most schools saw enrollment stay flat, and they're seeing that as a victory given all the uncertainty going on. But there was a larger trend, and it was kind of more at schools in the Chicago area where there were declines in freshmen and first year students, which is kind of concerning, you know, because where are those students going? Are they deferring for a year, or are they deciding they need to work to help families? We really don't know exactly what's happening yet, if they're deciding to wait, or they've enrolled somewhere else, or they're staying home for a year. Those numbers, we'll have some more details kind of later in the semester. But the lack of freshmen was really made up in a lot of schools by increased graduate enrollment that was able to kind of stave off overall declines. And I think that's how a lot of schools were able to keep their numbers kind of flat, or even seeing slight decreases or slight increases, but nothing super drastic for any of the schools.
And at least in your area, community colleges, which many people might have thought, well, kids are going to just stay home, they're going to go a cheaper route, go to the community college for a year or two, but you're not necessarily seeing bigger enrollment there either, right?
Right, and I think that, you know, in other recessions and, you know, previous years, that's kind of what's happened. People lose employment, they go back to gain new skills, and community colleges are a, you know, nearby affordable option. But so far, you know, some schools in the suburbs, community colleges, have actually seen pretty substantial declines, you know, 8 to 10% of students from last year, which is pretty substantial and surprising. And, you know, we're seeing nationally numbers like that as well, with larger declines in community colleges. So it kind of, you know, community colleges often serve lower-income students, students of color, the most vulnerable students coming from groups most impacted by COVID. And so it kind of remains to be seen as we get more data about who exactly is not showing up this fall, you know, by race, gender, income. You know, we can get a better picture of who was really affected by COVID when it comes to enrollment.
And what about the SIU system? Jennifer, you've been on the Carbondale campus, but following the entire system, also a welcome surprise with these numbers?
Sure. The enrollment in Carbondale was actually kind of unexpected. There was a dramatic increase in first-time students, 32.9% increase in first-time students. The overall first-time college students is not normally that high for Carbondale. They've been experiencing a decline in students overall. There was still an overall decline of 2.8% compared to last fall. On the Edwardsville campus, they were down about 1.5%. A lot of students saying that they're sticking closer to home, and they're able to do that through both of the SIU campuses in Carbondale and in Edwardsville.
Yeah, Kate, before we move on from college enrollment discussions, but when I look at the fall, yes, maybe they've dodged a bullet here. Maybe things seem a lot better right now, but there's still concern. There's concern that the coronavirus, things could get worse overall across the country and here in Illinois as the winter comes around. So they're not out of the woods, right?
No, and I think that's why some schools have are increasing flexibility when it comes to students. You know, usually you have deadlines for enrollment or deciding when to apply, and a lot of schools have been waiving those kinds of enrollments. And one notable thing at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, they actually are allowing all colleges to take spring transfer students and spring applicants this spring, which they typically do not do. But they said because there was so much uncertainty and they want to be able to keep enrollments up if, you know, students drop out after the fall or they're not seeing as many applicants for the next year, they'll be able to kind of balance it out this way by allowing more students to come in for the spring.
And Jennifer, I know SIU officials are also probably concerned still about the future, and they made an announcement this week regarding tuition.
They did. For families, low-income families, those making less than $63,575 per year, they're guaranteeing that they'll cover the cost of tuition and mandatory fees for 8 consecutive semesters for those students. There are a few other pieces of criteria that have to be met, but you know, that's a big deal. SIU prides itself on all of its campuses in being an access university, one where people can get access to higher education that they might not otherwise be able to be a part of. And so this was rolled out this week as a way to try and attract some of those students who may otherwise not have the ability to attend higher education.
All right. Let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first.
Well, we've been talking about the devastation that we've seen because of the virus, you know, the effect on fall sports and concerns about college enrollment. But at least in one area, Illinoisans have not let it affect them, it seems, and that's in what some people would call vices. So once again, in the month of August, we set a new record for sales of adult-use marijuana, $64 million of marijuana items were sold, 1.4 million items, according to the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. So people are apparently finding some way to ease the distress. And we also had the results from the first full month of sports betting in Illinois. From the Illinois Gaming Board was released this week. It showed gamblers placed $52.5 million in wages during July, with most of the bets on soccer, something like $20.5 million bet on soccer. The way it works to do sports betting, it has to be affiliated with a casino, and there are only two casinos at the time that were offering this, one in Des Plaines and one in Alton. Now, more sports books have opened up since then, so I'm sure we'll see the amount being placed grow dramatically in the next report, which will be coming out in about a month.
Jen Fuller?
I guess you could call mine a blast from the past. I know a lot of people have been hearing a lot from former Governor Rob Blagojevich since his release from federal prison earlier this year. I had the opportunity to talk to former Governor George Ryan, who's out with a new book that really takes a closer look at his decision to halt executions in Illinois. That was about 20 years ago. It was interesting to talk to him about what was going on behind the scenes, conversations that he had with his wife, for example, about, you know, how could he have his hand on the switch when and if it came time for an execution in the state of Illinois. So he's shopping that book around and talking about how that all came together.
All right. And Kate McGee?
You know, I cover higher ed, and we're thinking of colleges being remote this year, but there are a couple of instances this week on college campuses around the state that I'm watching. One is at Northern Illinois University. The police there are investigating a possible hate crime. They found a derogatory word sprayed on the Black Studies building, and so the school is looking at charges in that investigation. And at Western Illinois, another sad instance with a student who was shot by allegedly by his roommate. That student's now been arrested, and the outcome of that going forward is something I'm keeping an eye on.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Kate McGee from WBEZ, and Jennifer Fuller from WSIU. You can get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.